The Pod Warriors are back in business. Jordan, what is going on, man?
Man, it feels good to hear that music again. Feels like we don't have enough time to pump out enough content, and we miss doing these. But yeah, man, life has just been a whirlwind the past 3 months for both of us. So we're gonna get back into it. I promise. We're gonna start doing more of these, and I'm excited to do them. These are like the easiest things ever for me and Seth to record. So.
Yeah, we kind of got a whole like damn near season outline lined up of episodes we're going to bang out. So a lot of good stuff on the way. Tonight, we're talking WrestleMania, man. It's WrestleMania season. And as Jordan mentioned, we are both insanely busy right now. So wasn't sure if we're going to be able to get another chance to talk before the showcase of the Immortals. So we wanted to get at least one WrestleMania episode in the can this year. And we're going to be talking our favorite main events of all time. It's important I say that, our favorite, not necessarily the best, because that's a different discussion. And you could the best doesn't have to necessarily be your favorite, and vice versa. But yeah, we're going to be counting down our five favorite WrestleMania main events of all time. Jordan, I'll kick it to you first, man. What makes a great WrestleMania main event to you?
I honestly think for me, it's what you retain from the main event, because it's always the last thing that you remember about a WrestleMania. And to me, like, if I remember like moments in a match or good parts about the match, whether it be spots, a lot of it too, the story that leads into the actual match itself. I know I always tell everybody I'm not big on story, but dude, when you're at the biggest stage of the year, you got to have some story going into WrestleMania. So I feel like the story's a big part of it. And then, like I said, memorable moments from the match. Cause I'm sorry, man, if you're going home from a WrestleMania and you don't remember the main event, like, that probably wasn't a great WrestleMania.
Yeah. I think I have a very, very similar outlook to you, man. For me, one, it's gotta be entertaining in the moment, right? It's gotta exhilarate. It's gotta, you know, get you excited as you're sitting there and watching it. And the second part to me, to be a truly great WrestleMania main event, it's got to have a little bit of historical significance to it. Like, it can't be a match that just ends up meaning nothing. That's a big factor that plays into it. Now, I got a couple matches on my countdown that ultimately didn't have a ton of historical significance, but I just loved them so much they had to be on there. But that's for me, that's what I look for. I look for like the fun factor, right? Like a WrestleMania match, you want it to have all the bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. And then something that really holds up is like, you can look back at it being like a true milestone in the history of WrestleMania and in the overall WWE. So we're going to be going through our five. We'll answer some listener mail at the end. You ready to get into it, man?
Let's do it.
All right, so we will kick it off with my number five match. Recency bias be damned. I'm going night one, WrestleMania 39, the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. This is a match that actually got 5 stars from Dave Meltzer. If you guys are, you know, we give Uncle Dave a lot of shit on here. I don't necessarily agree with, I really don't agree with a lot of his stance on the wrestling biz, and I really don't agree with a ton of his star ratings, but I think it's safe to say that he is like the authoritative voice in wrestling journalism and news coverage, right?
100%. Yeah. Like you said, he gets a little dicky with some of these ratings, pulls out 7 stars and stuff like that. But I mean, the dude knows wrestling. Like, he's been doing this for how long? He clearly knows wrestling. Like I said, he's a little bit of a dick sometimes, but yeah, he's definitely the top journalist for wrestling, I would say.
Yeah, and if nothing else, the star ratings serve as a good jumping off point for discussion. But yeah, this match, it's got that historical significance that I talked about. First ever time that the tag team championships are main eventing WrestleMania. And it was only the second time ever that a tag team match had main evented WrestleMania after WrestleMania 1, where Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff took on Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. And this was an outstanding match. It had a great story going into it between Sammy and the Bloodline. I mean, Cody was as white hot gets going into Mania last year. Sami Zayn was just, you know, a cunt hair behind him as far as like the love he was getting from the fans. And he had KO, his longtime best friend and arch nemesis, by his side. 4 of the best workers in the biz. They're all super tight behind the scenes, so you know they were going to show out. They earned that spot to put those tag belts in the main event. And I thought it was just an absolutely beautiful match.
Yeah, there's nothing I can really add to what you just said. Only thing I can add is me and Seth were actually watching this match together, so added a little bit to it as well. We were at the Phelps Farm for this match. Yeah, just for a tag match, this is absolute perfection, honestly, to me. I loved everything about this match. There was no down moments in this match. It delivered on all levels.
And it capped off that wonderful night one of WrestleMania last year. Night two had some weird finishes that killed the buzz a little bit, but you know, night one as a standalone Mania is probably a top 10 WrestleMania of all time from last year. They just nailed it. You know, you had this match, you had the Charlotte and Rhea Classic, which was damn near just as good as this one. Seth and Logan showed out. It was just a great night of wrestling.
Yeah. See, this is my problem with WWE sometimes. When they don't overthink it and they just let the performers go out there and do their thing, this is what you get. And then, like, you get to night two, and it just seemed like who was booking night one was not even there for night two.
I think, in my mind, I think it was the opposite. I think there was someone that wasn't backstage night one that came in night two and decided to flex and show some muscle, dude, to his new buddies at TKO. I think this was kind of like Vince's last hurrah.
Yeah, and look what happened. Night two was
remember that
considerably
Raw after
worse.
WrestleMania. Yeah, that Raw after WrestleMania was really weird, too. You had just some weird choices for who was getting screen time, and a lot of the stuff that they kind of, you know, showed on night one or on that Raw after WrestleMania never really went anywhere. So I think Vince had like, a 48-hour flex where he was back in creative control, and then luckily Triple H got the reins back. As far as figures go, we have not gotten these Usos in the Mattel line yet, and I'm a little bit skeptical if we will. They got the black Ultimate Editions that came out last year, that ringside exclusive, and then they had the red ones that came out in Elite 106. They had that really, really awesome all-white attire with, the red accents, and there's actually a set of Funkos coming out. It's going to be a Fanatics exclusive Funkos coming out this Friday. It's March 18th as we're recording this, so this coming Friday, they're going to be dropping on WWE Shop exclusive. I don't know if we're going to get those as elites, man, because it feels like the ship may have sailed on the Usos. If we do, I think it's going to be down the road, maybe a WrestleMania series or something. I feel like we're going to get, Solo Jay and Solo Jimmy for our next Usos figures. How about you?
Yeah, I highly doubt we get these as well. I want to say something about, you just mentioned the WrestleMania line for Mattel figures. What an absolute dog shit line of figures, dude. That line never delivers. It should be just four banger figures, and every year it's like the Build-A-Figure this year was the biggest part of it. I mean, I hate that line right now. I just think it's always, it's never great. Then again, are the SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Royal Rumble ones that much better? It's just like, it's just no. Another money grab for Mattel is all it is.
The WrestleMania series was good. If you remember, it's damn near 10 years ago at this point, but it used to just be two figures each year, dude. It
Kane
was damn near
Taker.
Like a defining moments line. Yeah, you had Undertaker from his first match and Kane from WrestleMania 15, I believe it was. The year before that, in the WrestleMania 30 boxes, you had WrestleMania 10 Bret and WrestleMania 14 Shawn Michaels. And then I want to say the year after that, you had it was just Shawn Michaels and Triple H in the it was Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 12 and Triple H from some WrestleMania, I forget. But yeah, they were a lot better then, dude. Now that they've gone to the build, any set that has a Build-A-Figure, that's typically like a budget set, and you know it's going to be like less than desirable figures, and that's why they're throwing the Build-A-Figure in there to try to, because you need a little bit of extra juice to get people to buy these things. So yeah, I'm with you. This year's WrestleMania set was one of the worst ever, even though it did give us Nicholas.
It's still horrible. I found them the other day at Walmart, and I'm like, this is a despicable set. It even has Trish in it, and I don't even want that figure. It's fucking miserable.
The Trish was a straight re-release that nobody was excited for. Like, if they were going to do Trish, there was, 10 other Trish looks I could think of that I'd rather have. The Pat McAfee, the basic, was actually better than the elite Pat McAfee if you take away the articulation. Like, yeah, I'm right there with you, man. This year's WrestleMania set was in the mix for worst Mattel sets of all time. Sammy and KO, they are going to be in the upcoming Ultimate Edition series along with Cody. So we haven't seen those yet, but I mean, if you just look at pictures of them from the night, you can already imagine what the figures are going to look like. Mattel's kind of got the template down pat for Sammy and KO. So, I think that's something to be excited about if you're a completionist for Sammy and KO or those figures. But I don't think, I don't think there's a reason why we haven't seen any prototype pictures yet, because we already know exactly what they're going to look like, man. Any closing thoughts on Sammy and KO from WrestleMania 39?
Nope. Just great start to the countdown.
All right, Jordan, bring in the controversy. Hit us with your number five match.
All right, before I talk about this, I just want to say this is in no way me endorsing anything this piece of shit did. And I'm dead serious. Like, we have to get this out of the way. Like, I feel like you have to put a caveat on when you talk about any of this guy's matches. Was he a talented wrestler? Absolutely. He's still a piece of shit human being. Everything he did, neither one of us endorse any of it. But I feel like you guys are smart enough audience that we can fucking not talk about that right now and just focus on just this match for this 10 minutes or whatever we're going to talk about it. So from WrestleMania 20, HBK versus Triple H versus he who shall not be named Chris Benoit. Dude, this WrestleMania to me was the last one that kind of felt like old WWE. It was in Madison Square Garden. There was so much buzz around this WrestleMania. Like, it had like the feel to it. Benoit had obviously never won the WWE title. He won the Royal Rumble. HBK was supposed to be on a shortened run at this point, and he was like peak HBK at this point. And then Triple H was obviously who Triple H is. I mean, it was just a great match. I still remember watching this match to this day. HBK basically did everything in this match. It was basically an HBK spot fest. Like, he was doing moonsault off the top rope onto the floor. It literally was just an HBK spot fest, which made the match that much more memorable. There's a great announce table spot where Triple H and HBK put Benoit through the table. Man, I feel like the really good announce table spots have taken a dip. It kind of feels like they're lazy spots now. Like, they used to be, like, it used to feel something when they went over to the announce table. Now it's like this spot again. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that, but I used to think the announce table spots were like some of the coolest spots they could do, especially when it was a Spanish announce table.
Well, I feel like they used to do a much better job of not like telegraphing it so much, right? Like, now they got to spend, you know, 45 seconds freaking sweeping all the shit off the table.
Yeah.
Then you got to hit them with a strike to lay them back out and stuff. Like, it almost gets to unbelievable. I feel like think about that first table spot that Brett took from Diesel back in Survivor Series 95. He just gets knocked off the apron and launched through it. Like, no clearing of anything. However they land is however they land. So I'm with you, man. I think it kind of takes some of the buzz away from it. This is a good match, man. I enjoy it. I'll be honest with you, dude. Like, as I get older, man, I've kind of gone in reverse on my Benoit stuff. I used to be able to really kind of separate the art from the artist, but I don't know if it's just, you know, getting more years of dadhood under my belt or what, man. I can't stand to see the guy on the TV anymore, dude. Not judging you for throwing this match on there, man, because everybody's got their right to have their own opinion on this stuff. I mean, dude, I bought a Chris Benoit custom figure like 6 years ago. You know what I mean? So this is well after his crimes and everybody knew what he did. Like, I used to download him for my universe on WWE 2K. But I don't know, last couple of years, man, I don't really know what changed within me or whatever, but I've gotten to the point where I just can't stand seeing the guy on TV, man. That being said, one of the best triple threat matches of all time for sure. And if you can just completely, like you said, if you can just black out,
you have to,
you know, everything that happened after the moment with him and Eddie celebrating is an all timer of a WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, it was like, dude, the sad thing about it is like everything you just said, that literally should have been a moment that stood. It just should have always stood the test of time, you know. I just, man, dude, both of them crying in the ring, both of them having their WrestleMania moments. It felt like that should still be a huge moment to all of us. And granted, we can still enjoy Eddie, but just, dude, the fact that everything that happened, it was hard for me to put this match in. It really was. I had this on probably my top 10. Me and Seth had a couple ties, so
I will say, yeah, in Jordan's defense, this match was not in his original top five. We kayfabed it a little bit. We shared lists before because we want to make sure we're giving you guys as many matches as possible to discuss. So we each had a couple swapskis because we had some duplication on the list.
Yeah, but I still feel like this match belongs just because of the actual match it is. I get it, man. I know a lot of people will never watch this match again because of him, and I respect it. I completely understand it. To be honest, I've watched it one time since everything happened. So I get it. It's just, and it is, man. Being a parent really makes it even worse. Like, being a parent and a husband just makes it 10 times worse. So yeah, I get it. It's just, I don't know, man. It was watching him tap out Chris Benoit or Triple H at the end of the match was just, I don't know, man. It was just like time was standing still at that point. I remember being at my friend's house. There was 10 of us there. We were all watching it. And when Eddie came down, it was just, I don't know, man. It was like one of the cool WrestleMania moments. And then shortly after, it gets ruined.
Some historical significance. This is the last HBK in tights WrestleMania match. He would switch to the chaps shortly after this.
Yeah, this is a good looking match. Like, as far as everybody's attire goes, I mean, it was this is a fun match.
Uncle Dave gave this one 4.75 stars, so high marks from him. As far as figures go, this Chris Benoit was released in that Jax actually put out a WrestleMania 20 set that I guess it was just the winners, because interestingly enough, Chris Benoit was in there. No Shawn, no Triple H, though. But there is a, you know, basically a Vent Perfect, Jax, WrestleMania 20, Ruthless Aggression style Chris Benoit. The Shawn, you know, he's only appeared in the Mattel Basic 100 line. So they definitely, you know, they're at least open to making figures from this match, because I was kind of surprised as I was looking. There was no Triple H. The only Triple H in this look, which was kind of unique because he was rocking the white boots in this era, black trunks, white boots. It was in a Jax Kmart exclusive 2-pack with Eugene, of all things.
So, Jesus.
You could probably do some, you could pretty easily make a custom of this with a Mattel Triple H. Just get a long hair Triple H with the black trunks and do a little boot swap ski. But yeah, as far as Shawn goes, man, it was really just that basic 100. I was kind of surprised to see Mattel make a figure from this match, but it's, at the end of the day, it's Shawn in red and black gear. So unless you really know, like, it's not going to stand out that, oh, that's, it wasn't like a super distinctive attire that he rocked for Mania 20.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically all I got on that match. I'm surprised we made it that long. I don't know, man. I wanted to put it in my top five because it was one of my.
I feel you, dude, it's a significant match. Like you said, WrestleMania 20 is definitely one of the. I mean, it's in there, dude. As far as like the most important and beloved WrestleManias, dude, it's just got that cursed final image because, you know, Eddie would be gone less than 2 years later, and then, you know, yeah. We don't need to go into detail on how Chris Benoit's story played out, man. So it's a tough watch going back, man. There's some weird stuff on that show, but there's also some really really cool stuff and some great matches.
Yep.
All right, my number four. This one should be fun to talk about, man. Going back to Indianapolis, Indiana, the Hoosier Dome. I think it was actually called the RCA Dome at the time. Sid Justice, not Psycho Sid, not Sid Vicious. Sid Justice at the time, going against Hulk Hogan. This match got -2 stars from Dave Meltzer. And when I see stuff like that, it makes me question if Dave knows what wrestling's all about, man. If he understands what it's supposed to be. I think this match is just fun, dude. At the time, it was billed as Hogan's last match ever, and I'm 7 years old at the time. I legit thought it was going to be his last match of all time, man. It ended up being the main event over a Macho Man Randy Savage and Ric Flair World Championship match, which was huge, you know, seeing a non-title match main event over the World Championship. So you really believed it was Hogan's last match. Sid was a super cool heel. And Hulk's just awesome, dude. He comes out. He's got on the Hulk Hogan tank top. It's Hulk at the top, USA flag in the middle, then Hogan at the bottom. His entrance is crazy, dude. Indianapolis just comes alive for him. Sid jumps him as soon as he gets in the ring. They don't cut Real American, though. So before the match even starts, Hogan whoops Sid's ass and throws him over the top rope with Real American just rocking. And then he finishes the entrance with tearing off the tank top, like – just watch the first like couple minutes of it, man. It's truly exhilarating. And then you get the great finish. Ends in a DQ, and you get Papa Shango and a returning Ultimate Warrior at the end. Just, again, this is definitely, you know, a big nostalgia blast on this one for me. But I've watched WrestleMania 8 a lot, and I still think it's a really fun match. It's not any kind of work rate match, but for just two larger-than-life people going at it, and then you get all the bananas and shenanigans stuff at the end. Two big thumbs up from me.
Oh, man. There's nothing wrong with this match outside of the fact that Hogan's a piece of shit. I just, Dude, every time that I watch these matches that Hogan must go over, it just, I don't know, man, that like image of him posing at the end of WrestleMania almost every year, it just, it's like burnt into my head. So like every time I see him win a match at WrestleMania, it's like, oh, look, Hogan wins again. It's just, I don't know, man. That kind of taints it for me a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad match. It's just Hogan just always winning. And like going back to it, I mean, it made sense. He was the number one draw. I get it. It's just, I don't know, man. We were going through a time where one guy was basically winning every year. I mean, it's similar to what we got now. Like one guy is winning the year every year. And I don't know, maybe that taints it for me because I'm not a huge fan of these like five-year long windows of someone just winning every match. So maybe that's part of it for me, but it's not a bad match. Sid's awesome. Obviously I'd prefer to Sid to win this match because I love Sid, but
well, the match it ended in DQ with the run-in, man. Yeah. And Sid kicked out of the leg drop. He was only the I want to say maybe the first or second person ever to actually kick out of the leg drop, dude. So
yeah,
you know, I don't think it wasn't like Hulk just squashed him, man. I just thought it was fun, man. It's like I said, for 7-year-old kid watching it, man, that match and then really that whole WrestleMania is just ingrained in my head.
Sure. No, I get it.
For figures, the only Hulk we've got, which is surprising, man, because I feel like this thing would do bananas numbers for Mattel, is in the Unmatched Fury, the line with Jax where it was like the big statues. And it's interesting that they pose him with the Winged Eagle. I can't find any picture of him rocking the Winged Eagle mm-hmm. with that Hulk USA tank top, because this was early 92. It's the only big event I remember him wearing that tank top at. I looked at, you know, I thought maybe he would have had it at Survivor Series 91. That's the last time he had the Winged Eagle prior to this night, and he was just rocking the regular Hulk rule. So I think it just may have been a little bit of a Jax mashup on that one. For Sid, you could make a pretty good one with Mattel. They had Elite 39. It's in the Psycho Sid with the shorter hair. If you swap out the head with the head from the Sid Justice Basics, or there's a classic Superstar Sid that's pretty much picture perfect for this. So, yeah, really fun match. Ultimate Warrior was in the Hall of Fame line, and pretty much any Papa Shango will do for those guys if you want to complete it with their run-ins. But, yeah, WrestleMania 8, Sid and Hogan, that's my number four pick. Jordan, you ready for your number four?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, so we're going to go back to WrestleMania 26, Undertaker versus HBK, Streak versus Career. So the one thing I'll say about this match is I had a bad feeling about this match because their WrestleMania 25 match was just, I mean, it was damn near perfect. Like, why would you run this back the next year? I felt like the way that 25 match ended was just so good. But I mean, they added something to it with Streak versus Career. So just there's so much. It turned into a no DQ match or no holds barred, whatever they call it at that time. So much action inside and outside the ring. One of my notes on this was the overusage of HBK doing the throat slash in this match. Like, I think he did it like three or four times.
Just spamming the Tom button in WWF No Mercy.
Yeah, and the last time he did it was actually at the end of the match. He's just completely beaten down. He gets up after Undertaker's telling him to say that. Right? Does the throat slash and then slaps Undertaker across the face, and Undertaker hits him with the tombstone for the three count. This was actually the perfect way to end this feud between these two. I really wish this was actually Sean's last match because him coming back, God, dude, it kind of taints this a little bit because it's not actually his last match.
Sean never came back after this.
Yeah. We're just going to MIB this. We're just going to act like that match in Saudi never happened.
This was Shawn Michaels' last match. He never wrestled a match bald 9 years later where he somehow carried the other three guys to. He was somehow first match in 9 years, and he was the best performer in the ring. But no, that never happened, dude. So let's stick to the matter at hand.
I just prefer to think that Shawn never shaved his head either, and he's always long-haired Shawn Michaels, because that's just a nightmare fuel that I never thought I needed to see. But yeah,
you don't like the Trevor from Grand Theft Auto look he's rocking as the NXT commissioner?
I sure don't, buddy. I sure don't. I'd prefer he had a skullet at this point over that. Like, I mean, dude, if you bald on top and you still got long hair, it still looks kind of cool. Like Hogan's had it for 35 years, 45 years, whatever. It'll look
fine. You know, I thought he, if you remember in the run up to that, he was rocking the cowboy hat and he'd have like a bandana headband around his head underneath. And like, so he was bald, but with a headband. I thought that looked okay. And I thought that's what he was going to wear for the match. But then the match, he just went straight freaking Stone Cold cue ball, dude. Like, yeah, it just wrecked your childhood, man.
It wasn't good.
Dave Meltzer gave this match 4.75 stars. Both wrestlers have been expertly done in the Elite line. The WrestleMania 38 set, you remember Jordan was shitting all over the WrestleMania sets. We both were. But in the WrestleMania 38 Elite set, they do have HBK from this match. And Elite 14 has The Undertaker from this match. I actually have that figure on my shelf right now. I got to ask, dude, because I feel like the popular sentiment among fans is that the WrestleMania 25 one is just a little bit better than this one. Is there a reason why you prefer this one over 25?
Well, mainly because this one was the main event. I mean,
you know what? You're exactly right, dude. My bad. I'm a dumbass, dude. I forgot. I mean, nobody remembers that Triple H Randy Orton match from 25, though, dude. Like, in my head, if you just, like, I would totally lose on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire if they asked me what was the main event, because I would just, without even thinking, I would say WrestleMania 25, it was Shawn and Undertaker. Triple H and Randy Orton had the big forgettable match. Which match do you like better? Do you like the 25 or the 26 better?
25. There was so much good stuff in it, and it's just a great match. But like I said, I couldn't pick it because it wasn't the main event, so I went with the next best thing. And I still thought this was a 5-star match. Like,
it's a great match, yeah. Outstanding. Good ending to HBK's career. It was cool seeing, you know, him and Undertaker kind of just feuded on and off so much throughout their careers that it worked. It made sense for those guys to be in there together.
And, like, two of the top performers from their era, like, them being in the main event when they're both 40 years old is pretty incredible, and they both could still work at this point, so... Yeah, it felt pretty easy to put this in my top five.
Yeah, and that run that Taker had, starting with Edge at WrestleMania 24, then the two Shawn matches, the two Triple H matches, and CM Punk at WrestleMania 29, that's probably the peak Undertaker WrestleMania era right there, that 6-year run he had of just absolute bangers.
Yeah, phenomenal.
All right, let's hit the beverage break before we get into our top three, man. What are you sipping on tonight?
Well, I still had some leftover canned cocktails in the fridge, so I'm doing a Jameson Ginger and Lime canned cocktail. Pretty delicious. Nice, yeah. I mean, St. Patty's Day.
I got a box of those last year. Yeah, those are good, man. I got a set of those last year. I'm doing what was the big drink for St. Patty's Day? You just doing green beer, or were you taking shots, man?
So I did beer, a couple shots of Jameson, a couple Irish car bombs.
What?
Yeah, it was margarita, whiskey.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a lot of beer. I did some Jameson, like I said, and some Guinness, Busch Light. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. It's just St. Patty's Day.
I love Jameson. That's my number two hard liquor besides Maker's Mark, man. Jameson's tough to beat.
Yep.
I am drinking a Leinenkugel Summer Shandy, man. It's supposed to start to be getting a little bit warmer. It's actually, we were supposed to have a freeze tonight somehow, man. So me and Sheena were out tarping over, some of the plant life stuff in the backyard because some of the shit's already starting to bloom. So fucking Mother Nature trying to butt fuck us, man. But I'm doing a Leinenkugel Summer Shandy. Are you a fan of the Leinenkugels?
I love it when it gets warm outside, man. It's just like the anything.
It's a good post-yard mowing beer.
Yeah,
man,
dude, anything shandy is just so good when it's 90 degrees outside and you're sweating your nuts off.
Can I tell a story about a time that you really hurt my feelings that I just thought about?
Oh, boy. All right, let's hear it.
It was when you came to visit in Hawaii. I just thought about it because you talked about how much you love Shandy. You came to visit me in Hawaii, and the first day you were there, we went and hit Tamora's Wine and Liquor to get some sushi and get some booze. And we're looking at the beers and stuff, and I recommended you Ballast Point Grapefruit Sculpin, one of the best IPAs out there. You looked at it, and you looked at me like I was just the biggest bitch in the world, and you were like, I don't drink any kind of beer with any kind of fruit in it, dude. And like less than 5 years later, you're telling me, you're like requesting me to get you like a kiwi ale or some shit from the store, dude. So I just want to know, you made me feel really bad about that. And then once you started trying those different beers, you realized that you loved them, dude. So yeah. I still have not forgotten how I felt at that store. I felt like such an idiot for suggesting that beer to you. And you were just like, no.
Hey man, sometimes we all got to grow up a little bit and fruit the beer.
All right. You ready to get going back in the countdown?
Let's do it.
All right, my number three. I thought this was a pretty polarizing choice, man, when I was kind of sketching out my top five. But then Jordan had it in his original top five as well. WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. This match got 4.25 stars from Dave Meltzer. I got a little bit of a complicated relationship with this match, man. As a kid, when I first saw it, you know, not going to lie, it was a little bit boring to me. You know, the last 10 minutes is pretty much like wrestling masterpiece as far as work rate goes. But I was so fucking pissed at the finish, man. Yep. Like, you know, Bret Hart said it, dude, that goddamn Gorilla Monsoon screwed me. Nobody ever made any kind of mention about it being any sudden death. It was just 60 minutes, most falls win. Match gets announced as a draw. Bret Hart's damn near out of the arena, and they force him back in there to start a sudden death. He wasn't even in his right mind. No wonder he walked right into Sweet Chin Music. So I was really pissed, and for the longest time, man, that like that mix of like boredom and just anger at the finish kind of had this match was in like a negative place in my head. But then as an adult, I went back and watched it, liked it a little bit more, and then I read Bret Hart's book that he wrote, Hitman, you know, my real life in the cartoon world of wrestling, I think is what it's called. Probably the best wrestling autobiography ever. But I read it, and he really kind of broke down everything that went into that match and how proud of it he was, and he considers it one of his top two or three best matches ever. Went back and watched it after that. I kind of see the points Bret was making, see some of the thoughtfulness that went into how they laid the match out. And I've just really grown to love it since then, man. It's not an easy watch. This is one that, you know, you're going to fire it up maybe once every year, year and a half to get through. But it's a really great match. Two guys at the absolute peak of their in-ring ability. And, you know, it's if you have, I don't want to sound like I'm like, you know, sipping a Chianti and like have my monocle in. But if you have a refined palate for pro wrestling, I think this is a very, very great match to watch. It's not one you're going to sit down and show your casual friends. But if you got something you want to watch with some hardcores, dude, I think that's a good one to turn on, man. Why did you originally have this one on your list, Jordan?
Same reason, dude. I always felt like when Shawn and Bret were in the ring together, it was just magical. Like I always felt like they could make they could make magic no matter what it was. Like everybody says they can make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Like I just felt like no matter the stipulation or whatever it was, like these two always made magic. I 100% agree with you. When I was a kid, I was bored out of my fucking mind to the point where I'm pretty sure I fell asleep during this match. Like it just, and even as an adult, man, this is a long watch. Like get the tape out for your eyelids. Cause it's a long one. This is not an easy watch, but like you just said, the last 15, 20 minutes, I feel like is really good. The restart, I don't know how else she would have did it. I mean, but yeah, at the time, them not explaining it kind of fucking ruined it. But yeah, the last 20 minutes of this match is a banger to me. Maybe fast forward through a little bit of it if you're really not in the mood to watch a 60-minute match, because I feel like you can kind of skip through the first 30 minutes and just watch the last 30 pretty easily. I mean, we've already ruined the finish for you, so spoiler alert.
I mean, in our defense, it's going on 28 years old at this point, man. But yeah, I'm there with you, dude. The thing is, even at 11 years old, when it got through like 40 minutes and it was 0-0, I kind of put together that either this thing's either ending in like a tie and we're going to get some sort of shenanigans, or it's going to be like 1-0 at the buzzer. I think when it was originally announced, you know, they announced it about a month prior on WrestleMania or on Raw that it was going to be an Iron Man match. This is the first time we'd ever seen something like this in WWF. WCW did a 30-minute Iron Man match with Rick Rude and Ricky Steamboat at, I want to say, 1992 Beach Blast, maybe. It was either 92 or 93. It was one of the – I'm pretty sure it was Beach Blast, Ricky Steamboat and Rick Rude Iron Man match. But this is the first time we've seen it in WWF. Definitely first time we've seen it at WrestleMania. I'm thinking it's going to be something like 4-3, right? Like 5-4. We're going to get some kind of crazy match with a bunch of different finishes. But no, it was literally just two guys going out there and putting on a clinic for an hour. And it, you know, like a clinic, sometimes the excitement level waned a bit. But yeah, dude, I think Bret just had a solid claim, because if there was going to be overtime, they should have just announced it from the start. Because, dude, when the clock hit zero, he had Shawn Michaels dead to rights in the sharpshooter. Motherfucker was locked in, wasn't going anywhere. Like, he should have never had to let go of that hold if there was always going to be overtime, you know?
You know what I equate this match to? Like, you know when you have to do a training that you absolutely fucking do not want to do for work, but you know it's going to be, like, really vital to your long-term success?
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, a match, like, if you're sitting people down and for wrestling training, like, this is what you're going to have them watch. Like, look at this shit. They go out there for 60 minutes and just put it down in a technical classic. Like, that's what this match kind of feels like to me. It's like the boring training video you don't want to watch, but you know it's going to be really vital to your long-term success. I feel like that's what this is.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's two of the absolute masters at the top of their game. The match looks great. You got Brett in his all black gear, which would come to be like his signature look for the last couple years of his career. You got Sean in the white and gold, has the entrance coming down from the arena. You know, I can't believe we talked this whole time and didn't mention Jose Super Sock Lothario, man.
Like, oh boy.
Why did they feel the need to pair him with Sean for that run, dude? Like, I think he was there Sean's whole first championship run up until Sid hit him with that camera, man, at Survivor Series, dude. Like, why? That still puzzles me, man. He brought absolutely nothing to the table. Like, I don't know why they felt like Sean needed to have like a wise old mentor.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that just happened and you're just going to let it happen.
And Sean, ever the gentleman, you know, 96, 97, 98, Sean was just a straight up menace. If you go back and watch, dude, because Jose Lothario's coming in the ring and Brett's still kind of hanging out, Sean tells Earl Hebner, like, to tell them to get the fuck out of the ring right after the match opens so he can have the whole spotlight to himself, man.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, let's go on to Jordan's number three.
All right, so my number three comes from WrestleMania 31. It is Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. I am definitely biased on this. Seth is as well. We are in the house for this match. It was beyond exciting the way it was done. Me and Seth will be the first two people to admit the build to this match was absolute dog shit. They were doing a tug of war with the title in the middle of the ring the week before this. That was Brock and Roman, because Seth wasn't originally in this match. He actually cashed in his Money in the Bank. I'll be the first to admit I was not excited for this match at all when it started. When Seth cashes in the Money in the Bank, this match just took such an upturn. And the match itself, even before Seth got in, is good. I mean, it's a good Brock and Roman match. I don't think it's like their best ever, but I mean, when Seth gets in the ring, it just goes to another notch. So yeah, this one was pretty easy for me. Just like the excitement in the building when Seth's music hits, it's just, I don't know, man. I was going into that match, I was so down because we had just watched Undertaker and Bray in an absolute snooze fest of a match, and I called exactly how it was going to end, so that kind of ruined it for me.
And you were dressed as Bray.
Yeah, didn't really help anything, but yeah, man, this match delivers, and every time I watch it, dude, I get excited. It's just, it's a cool moment, and still the only time that's ever happened in a WrestleMania match. So yeah, this was a pretty easy choice to be in my top five.
Yeah, dude, this is, I actually had it at number two on my list originally, man. It's just an awesome match, dude. I think this probably is their best match, man. I think it beats out the Last Man Standing match from SummerSlam, which, dude, what's the deal with how come they put on boring-ass matches until me and you were in the building, dude? WrestleMania 31 fucking rocked, and SummerSlam 2022 fucking rocked, and we were there for that one also, yeah, man. What's up with that? But, you know, they kind of took the same template from SummerSlam 2014, the year before, where Brock just beat the shit out of John Cena all over the building, and Roman had a few more hope spots, though, a few more little comeback spots. But then you had that spot on the outside where Roman shoves Brock into the post and he starts bleeding. And for my money, from the moment Roman shoves him into the post until, you know, the match ends, I think that's like the best 6-minute stretch of professional wrestling I've ever seen, man. Roman has this awesome comeback, hits like 3 Superman punches, hits a bunch of headbutts, dude, hits 2 straight spears, and Brock still kicks out. Goes for one more Superman punch and gets F5'd, and that's when Seth cashes in. You know, you got whenever they like laid this out, whoever had the idea for that camera shot to just follow Seth running down the ramp, iconic, man. You've seen it so many times. Pretty much every time they have a Money in the Bank, like, you know, highlight reel or something now, they show that. I thought another thing that helped was the stadium looked awesome. Like the design for WrestleMania 31 was really, really clean. It wasn't anything over the top, but it was just clean. And the cool thing was this match started as the sun was setting. So you kind of had like, it's getting like darker and darker as the match is going on and on and getting more dramatic. And it ends with Seth holding up the belt at the top of that ramp with the fireworks going off. Just, it looks amazing. The action was great. I think it was just, I think it was a perfect match.
I think exactly what you just said is spot on. I feel like when you do a West Coast WrestleMania outside, I don't know, man, just like the sun setting as that match started, like you just said, there was just something about it, man. It just looks so cool. And then by the end of that match, it's complete darkness. It's complete nightfall. It's just, dude, that match was special, man. It was just, that was a special WrestleMania to be at overall. It was just, it was so good. It was just clean from top to bottom. I mean, this match just caps it off. And Seth whipping the belt around above his head was just fucking iconic. And the fireworks going off, it was just, it was perfection, man. It really was. Like, they absolutely nailed the finish. The camera angle work with Rollins, like you just said, that was probably what kept Kevin Dunn around for the last 10 years.
Yeah, no lie, man. Other thing, gotta mention the crowd, dude. The crowd was super charged for this match. This is like, you know, some of the peak early days of Roman Reigns hate. Like, they're booing him out of the building as he's coming out. And you remember Brock just that week had re-signed. Brock's contract was up after that WrestleMania. So people were thinking it's a foregone conclusion. He's going to drop the belt to Roman. And it came out, I want to say Wednesday or Thursday of that week, that he'd re-signed a multi-year contract with WWE. So now he's basically the conquering hero, right? It's a love fest for Brock when he's coming out. He got a huge pop. Yeah. People were booing Roman the first, you know, 75% of that match. But then by the end, Roman had him, dude. Like, people were cheering. They were popping for the near falls, man. And then it just explodes when Seth Rollins' music hits, man. So, yeah, it's, I don't know, man. It was just so awesome. You know, Seth, my favorite wrestler of the modern era. It was so cool seeing him win the championship in person and a match that he wasn't even freaking in. Like, I don't know. I cannot find any fault at this match at all. I know Jordan, if he had won, it's probably that Roman did not take his shirt off, man.
Again, you're welcome.
He said it. Jordan was cheering it at WrestleMania 31 for Roman to take his shirt off, dude. And he didn't do it, man. It took him another 5 years before he'd finally remove the vest. And we've seen what's happened since then. He's basically been the champ since he took his shirt off, man. Yeah, hasn't lost it.
You're welcome. Like, I made Roman level up. Like, that was what leveled Roman up.
You know what's puzzling to me, man, thinking back on that day? I don't think we drank any beer at WrestleMania 31, dude. I don't remember getting any beers
at that show. We both had one right as we walked in, but that was it. It was too fucking hot, dude.
It was hot, and it was expensive as fuck in the stadium. And remember, we had a freaking bender the night before. We did we called it the Mania Mile Bar Crawl. We hit basically like the hipster district of San Jose, and I think we hit 11 bars, man. I think we hit 11 different bars, and a couple of them we like hit twice on the way back, man. It ended up with us, you know, basically, I was basically passed out in a diner by the end of it, man. So that probably contributed to it as well.
Not basically. You were passed out. I have a picture of you passed out on my shoulder.
I was a lot more of like a little bit casual. I don't know if casual is the right word, but maybe just didn't have as high a tolerance back then. I was pretty much like a Corona drinker, man. Every once in a while I'd do a mixed drink back then. So it just kind of leveled up, doing a lot of getting more into the craft beer game. I think I'd be able to give it a little bit more, have a little bit more stamina in the tank for the day after. But yeah, man, it was a lot of fun, dude. Great experience. Our first WrestleMania. So it had everything going for us to love it anyways, being our first WrestleMania main event seen in person, and it just delivered 10 times over.
For sure.
So Uncle Dave gave this one 4.5 stars. The figures from this one, Elite 38 Roman is from this event. He's got that vest with the black vest with the white logo on it. Brock, pretty much any Brock is going to work, man. Like, he didn't, you know, Brock never really went all out on the Mania attire. Unfortunately, you really can't get the true Brock because they've never done him with the Jimmy John's logos. But if you really wanted to hit a customizer up, they'd be able to set that up for you real easy. And then for Seth, he had that Toys R Us exclusive that came out, and then it recently got re-released in the Greatest Hits line. All right, my number two match. Another nostalgia blast. This was one that me and Uncle Dave disagree on. WrestleMania 3, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, probably the most famous wrestling match ever. This is really kind of like the first thing that pops in my mind, I think, when I hear like WrestleMania. It's this and the match we're going to talk about. You know, me and Jordan's, you know, we both have the same number one. These two are the first ones that pop into my mind. I know my list was Hogan heavy. Like I said, I guess the nostalgia was kind of gripping me this weekend as I was putting the list together. But work rate, yeah, this match ain't setting the world on fire. But I just think as far as spectacle, as far as like the aura and the feel goes, you just can't beat it, man. Andre was this, you know, had been a babyface for so long, turns heel, and Hulk's gotta overcome the monster, man. He gets it done. This match got negative 4 stars from Dave Meltzer, believe it or not. Negative 4. Can you believe that, man?
I mean, on Meltzer's criteria, yeah, I can believe it. I mean, it's not a technical classic by any means, but dude, it's Andre the Giant, dude. It's the spectacle that is Andre the Giant.
Hulk body slammed Andre, dude.
Yeah, I mean, again, we like Dave, we respect him, but this is the kind of shit that he does. It's like, dude, you could have at least given this a 2-star match. I mean, I'm not saying it was perfect by any means, but dude, like you just said.
Yeah, I mean, Andre could barely walk at this point. Work rate, it was nothing. But as far as a wrestling match goes, it was still really entertaining, dude. You had Andre beating up Hulk. It looked believable enough. And then you get the big comeback from Hulk. That's all it ever needed to be, man. And just look at the people in the arena. Go back and watch this match, man. They are going absolutely bonkers for this. I just think it's a really, really fun match, man. And I think it had to get recognized on our list.
Yeah, dude, there's nothing wrong with this match at all. You're right. This was the end of Andre. I mean, this really was. This is really the end days of Andre. It's kind of sad to watch, like going back and watching this match. It's cool that Andre was okay doing this, though, honestly. Like, dude, him getting slammed in the ring is just something we had never seen. It was just we just never seen Andre get manhandled. So it was cool that he agreed to do it. But yeah, I mean, this is iconic, dude. It's like one of the still images that you always picture from WrestleMania.
Yeah, for sure, man. As far as figures go, Hulk's old defining moments figure was from this match. You could kind of piece together a better version of it because they weren't doing the Hulk Hogan tan back in the day. That was a 2015 release. Nowadays, you can kind of piece together this figure from a couple different Hulks. And then Andre, just the Ultimate Edition is probably your best bet for Andre. And they did release Bobby Heenan and had on the white and gold suit from this. They put that in figure form in that Target exclusive Hall of Fame figure from back in 2016, man. So you can make a very good recreation of this match in figure form. Jordan, let's hear your number two.
All right, we're going to go all the way back to WrestleMania 17, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rock. To me, this is just my personal opinion. This is the greatest wrestling promo of all time. The promo package with Limp Bizkit My Way playing on it, this to me is like a nostalgia blast of the Attitude Era. Like, this is absolute perfection for me. They announced this match as no DQ right before it started, which at the time we were all like, what the fuck? To me, the Austin pop at this event is still one of the loudest pops I've ever heard in my life. Like, the roof almost comes off the place when he comes out. It's just an iconic entrance. The Rock got a pop, but it was not nearly even half of what Austin's was. The match itself, it's phenomenal. And they have like one of the biggest swerves ever with McMahon coming down to the ring. Everybody thinks he's out to help The Rock, helps Austin, hands him a steel chair. Austin beats the living shit out of The Rock with a steel chair to end up winning the match in the end. I don't know, man, this is like the two biggest stars of the Attitude Era. Although I'm still going to say that Austin was like 10 times the star that The Rock was at this point. Austin was carrying the company at this point to me. There's really not much I can say. It's just an iconic match between two of the biggest stars ever. I mean, what do you got to add to this, Seth?
I can already picture like the black and white, like Austin and Rock, like staring each other down and stuff.
I'm telling you, dude, it's iconic.
Yeah, I agree, dude. It's there may be a couple that I personally just like better, but that's definitely the best promo ever, man. It's no way to not get amped up. To this day, if I hear My Way by Limp Bizkit, I just think about Rock and Austin.
Yeah, I know.
And in the same way that Bret and Shawn, we talked about, was kind of like the two titans of the new gen era, going head to head at the peak of their powers. This was the same thing for the Attitude Era, man. It's in Texas. Rock gets a huge pop, dude. I don't know if Austin was 10 times better. I agree. As far as wrestling fans goes, I think history has kind of told the story that Rock was like, you know, 1B to Austin's 1A in the Attitude Era. There is some distance, man. You know, yeah. Rock obviously has all the mainstream recognition and he's gone on to be just an absolute massive star. But at the time, there was some distance between Austin and Rock. There just was, man. Rock did a tremendous job filling the gap when Austin was out with his neck injury and stuff, but there was still nothing like the Steve Austin pop during this time. And it was the same there in Texas, man. The roof went off for Austin. Great match. It was just the epitome of an Attitude Era main event. Brawling all over the arena, blood, lots of weapons. I still have, to this day, man, cannot get over the finish, dude. Yeah. It made zero sense at the time. I feel like it's made less sense since as time's gone by, and they shouldn't have done it in Texas, man. I mean, Austin teamed up with Vince McMahon to win, and the crowd still cheered. That's how much they love Steve Austin. I know Austin said on his podcast, you know, some years back, that if he had it to do over again, he just would have called a hot route in the ring. And, you know, when Vince comes in to crack beers with him and celebrate, he said, you know, I wish I would have just, you know, whispered to Vince stunner and just stunned him right there. And, you know, they'd had 24 hours to figure out how to explain it away on Raw. But yeah, man, that's kind of my one quibble. But other than that, dude, again, it's just special when you get two guys absolutely peaking at the right time as far as their popularity and their just, you know, their aura goes. And you definitely had it right here, man. Tremendous match at the end of what is got a very strong case to be the greatest WrestleMania of all time.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to the Austin podcast when he reviewed this match, did live commentary of this match?
Yeah, it was awesome. Talked about how he didn't like The Rock's blade job. Didn't think The Rock got bloody enough and stuff when he got in there.
Dude, like, the best parts of that whole thing is when he's like bigger than a shithouse rat. He's like, big fuck you. Here comes a stunner. Oh, Rock's going to do some blood work over here. Clearly doesn't know what he's doing with the blade. It's just, it's phenomenal. Like if you have time to watch that match and listen to Austin's commentary, it's awesome.
He does a good job breaking it down. Talked about how, you know, Austin was always a little bit more on the snug side with his work, whereas Rock was, you know, pretty soft in there as far as working with. And Austin said, you know, for whatever reason, man, those two guys brought the best out of each other, and they definitely did.
Yeah.
All three of their Mania matches are good, you know, 15, 17, and 19. This is probably the best one, though, even with the finish, man. You know, and Austin's, their ill-fated attempt to turn Austin heel. As far as figures go, surprisingly, this match really hasn't been recreated in figure form, man. The basic 100 Rock was his attire from this match. There's a ton of Rocks that are super close, but there's never been one that like picture perfect captures it. And then for Austin, they've never done Austin from this match. So I think that has to do with his vest. You know, most time he wore the OMR, the one more round vest for his big matches. This one, he's rocking one that had the BMF for Bad Motherfucker on the front of it. And neither Jax nor Mattel has ever done that one. I'm guessing just because it alludes to, you know, the F-bomb. But yeah, his vest had BMF on the front, and then on the back it had 101 proof. Never been done in figure form. So you're going to have to hit up one of the awesome customizers out there to get that WrestleMania 17 totally recreated in figure form. Uncle Dave gave this one 4.5 stars.
How? Like, dude, if this is not a 5-star match, like, I don't know, man.
I didn't go back and read any of the actual reviews. I just pulled star ratings. I can only assume, you know, it's not a super high work rate match. So I think maybe that, or maybe just he poo-pooed the ending, because the ending, it really didn't make sense, man. They didn't do enough foreshadowing. You know, it's right there in the promo where Austin kind of tells Rock, like, you know, I need this more than you could ever imagine. You know, he talked about how he has to have the WWF championship, but I thought maybe if they would have done a little bit more foreshadowing on that path to WrestleMania 17, that Austin really was going to do whatever took the win, but they didn't. So this kind of just came out. This felt like Vince Russo, like swerve for swerve's sake.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Before we get to number one, let's talk about worst WrestleMania main events ever.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
I mean, you were at it, dude. I think Roman and Taker is like one of the worst matches ever. Like Taker's even admitted he hates that match more than any match in his career. He admitted that he was not ready in January when it was pitched. He was even worse in April when they did the match. Like, and you could tell when you watch that match,
he was limping through it. Man. He looked so lost,
bad, dude.
Roman literally carried him to something barely passable.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. This is the thing I don't understand, and I know it's Vince, dude, but how the fuck can you watch Undertaker? Like, dude, he's limping down the ramp to the ring. Like, so I mean, Vince clearly knew he was fucked up. Like, don't you call an audible at that point and be like, this is not a good idea. We got to put something else on last. Like, I get it.
Especially because, you know, Roman was still struggling to grow into being that top babyface they envisioned for him. And, you know, dude, the heat's not going to go on Undertaker for this match stinking. People are just going to blame Roman, dude. When, you know, Roman is just going out there and trying to do his job the best he can.
Yeah, it's such a stupid idea. Like, dude, this is just Vince once again thinking Vince knows everything, and that's what you got out of it. It was fucking awful.
And, dude, it didn't end up being Undertaker's last match. I could give it a little bit more of a pass if it really did end up being Taker's last match. Because, you know, he did the big dramatic, like, you know, leaving the hat and the gloves and the jacket and everything, went and kissed his wife at ringside. Then he's still back for more matches the next couple of years. So it was just, yeah, it was weird all the way around, man. I felt bad for Roman. Like, this is supposed to be a big thing to put Roman over, retired Undertaker, and it came off like a wet fart all the way around. So I got two, man. One, I think, is probably just is kind of a cheap shot, but I'd say WrestleMania 36, Drew versus Brock in the empty arena. Like, it's just awkward more than anything else. And I really can't blame WWE for this. This is literally like a month into the pandemic. So I think they were just trying to, you know, go on the fly and do the best they could. You know, it got way better once they introduced the Thunderdome and stuff, but this is like the worst example of what pandemic wrestling could look like. Like, Brock and Drew in a little 4-minute match with no crowd there is just awkward.
It's bad.
The other one is WrestleMania 2000 or WrestleMania 16, the Fatal 4-Way match, a McMahon in every corner with Big Show, Mankind, Rock, and Triple H. Like, dude, they should have just done Rock and Triple H. Rock and Triple H had an awesome match
next
month at Backlash. Like, that should have just been the Mania main event. I don't know why they, because no shade to Mankind and Big Show, but they're only there because they had this vision to do McMahon in every corner. And the whole WrestleMania sucked, right? That was kind of one of the things of the Attitude Era up until WrestleMania 17. WrestleMania 15 and 16 both sucked. They were known, like, the B shows always kicked ass in the Attitude Era, and some of the big shows fell flat. But yeah, I hated that WrestleMania. I hate that whole WrestleMania, and the main event's just like the cherry on top.
Yeah, that match is miserable. I fucking still hate that match. I agree with you there.
All right, let's get into our number one match. This is in my short list of favorite matches ever. Definitely the best Mania match ever. Jordan had the exact same one. You know, it's a reason why we're best friends. Jordan, tell him what our best Mania main event ever is.
WrestleMania 6, champion versus champion. Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior. This is the first wrestling match I remember. This is what got me into wrestling. It's still my favorite match to this day. It's, I don't know, man. It's just perfection. Like, the two biggest mega stars in the world. I just don't think you'll ever get anything close to this again. We talked about Hogan and The Rock, and or not Hogan and The Rock, Austin and The Rock. But, dude, there was just something about this match, man. It's just like, Hogan was who he was. He was larger than life. And then Warrior, for this year leading up to it, just became, I mean, 1B to Hogan. Like, he was right there.
Lightning in a bottle, man.
Yeah, it's just, it's perfect, too, the way they do this. They tried to do this with Brock and, God, why am I blanking who he wrestled at 20? Oh, Goldberg. They tried to do it with Brock and Goldberg, and it was a wet fart. This one's just perfect. You can't ever do it again.
I think this is same kind of vibe as WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Andre, except with work rate actually involved. I know it's funny saying that with Hogan and Warrior, but both guys had their working boots on for this one. It's one of Hulk's best matches ever. It's, you know, it's in Ultimate Warrior's top two matches ever, top two or three matches. You know, I think his two pay-per-view matches with Randy Savage right there up with this one. Got 3.75 stars from Dave Meltzer. I don't know how he didn't do more. I think this is another just perfect match, dude. It's, you know, maybe it was just a little bit too slow paced for him. This one, interestingly enough, Pat Patterson sat down with the guys and they actually went, you know, move for move. The entire match was scripted out and rehearsed. I think that probably is due to Ultimate Warrior still being relatively green in the wrestling biz. And they wanted to make sure this thing came off, you know, the way they wanted it to. And it did, larger than life, man. You know, the test of strength, looking back, it's so hokey. They don't even do that spot in wrestling anymore. But it just worked with these guys. Really felt like it was two just big dudes wearing the hell out of each other. The finish is awesome with Warrior dodging the leg drop and hitting the big splash. And you're stunned when the three count hit. I remember I watched this live on pay-per-view and just being shocked that Warrior actually pinned Hogan and won both championships, man. This is like two superheroes going at it. It's like something out of a Marvel movie almost.
Yeah, that's why I say we'll never see this again, because I don't think there's any way to ever recreate this. Like, to get two guys that over at the exact same time is one thing, and just to have them script a perfect match is quite another. It's just, it's something to behold, man. I know some people don't love this match, and to you I say, well, I guess you just don't enjoy professional wrestling then, bud.
Yeah. Same, dude. Like, I have the biggest art piece I have in my office right now is from that match, man. Shout out to the Toronto crowd, dude. The Sky Dome was alive, man. Like, they were going nuts for every single thing these guys did. It's just an epic match, dude. I'll never forget, like, the closing. You know, Hulk hands the belt to Warrior. Warrior celebrating in the ring with, you know, the pyro going off as you see Hulk kind of sulking away. You know, it felt like that might be Hulk's retirement match. As crazy as that sounds, it felt like Hulk was going to be fading into the background, you know, but he ended up wrestling another damn near 20 years. Yeah, dude, just so much nostalgia, and it still holds up, man. I think as long as you're not somebody who's just all about like the flippy dippy stuff, dude, like this match still holds up. The psychology, the drama, the ending, it still holds up to this day.
This poster actually hangs behind me every time we podcast, so just know I'm all in on this match.
As far as figures go, this Warrior's been done multiple times. He was right there in the Series 1 Classic Superstars of Jax, one of the most significant figure sets of all time. He's been released over and over. I think the best one is definitely that Ultimate Edition that from the Amazon Fan Takeover a couple years back. Hulk was actually in the Survivor Series line. I think it was Hulk from Survivor Series 89, but he had on the exact same, you know, red bandana, Hulk Rules tank top. So that's going to be your best bet for a Hulk figure from this match. Like, just, I don't know. I kind of want to watch this match since we get done podding tonight, man. That's how amped up I am just talking about it.
It's perfect, man. It's absolute perfection for wrestling.
All right. You ready to get into some listener mail?
Let's do it.
All right. Let me get it pulled up on Facebook. All right. First question comes from Tony Barker, Jordan's bud out there in Nebraska. What would have been your favorite What If Mania main event? For example, Hogan versus Flair at WrestleMania 8, Austin versus Bret at WrestleMania 14, or maybe Orton versus Batista at WrestleMania 30, Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania 39. I threw that one in at the end. Or WrestleMania 40, I mean.
So I'm going to go with a match that was never probably going to happen or never did happen, but I feel like we really missed out on not getting Austin and Goldberg at WrestleMania, dude. It was just, that was the two top stars from their respective companies. And it was just a match we always wanted and we never got. And dude, still to this day, I feel like we got ripped off as wrestling fans not getting that match. Like, it needed to happen so bad.
Even with as good as Rock and Hogan was, man, you think they made the wrong call, dude?
I'm not going to say that. Like, I'm not saying they made the wrong call. I just felt like, dude, Austin and Goldberg was just a match that everybody fantasy booked for so long, just because they were both on the top of the respective companies at quite possibly.
Well,
the biggest.
My bad, dude. I had a brain fart, dude. I was thinking Hogan Austin, not Goldberg Austin.
Oh no, you're
my
good.
Bad. Yeah.
I knew what you meant.
Goldberg Austin, where they were, I think the thing, yeah, so they were kind of like just ships crossing in the night, because, you know, Goldberg debuted the Raw after WrestleMania 19, and that was, you know, Austin had his last, you know, his last match for 20 years at 19. Yeah, it would have been awesome seeing them go at it, man.
No, I wasn't saying it was ever actually going to happen. It just wrong place, wrong time is basically what.
Yeah.
But it's just something I always wanted. So, like, if you're going to ask me what I want for a WrestleMania main event, I'm going to give you exactly what I wanted, and that was it.
I would say WrestleMania 13, Bret versus Shawn. You know, before Shawn lost his smile, according to Bret, the plan was that Bret was going to beat Shawn, get his win back from WrestleMania 12, and it was going to be in a ladder match. So I just would have loved to see what that would have looked like. Bret and Shawn in the main event of WrestleMania 13 for a ladder match. I think it all worked out for the best, because instead of getting that, Bret wrestled arguably the greatest match in wrestling history with that submission match against Steve Austin at 13. So I think it worked out, man, but I still, like, I can't help but would love to see what it would have been like seeing Bret go over Shawn at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
All right. Zach Hertzer says, do you think WWE will have Jimmy and Jay start off night one or night two?
I'll say night two. I just feel like that's the right way to do it. Open with Bloodline, end with Bloodline. Like, I don't know, man. I still am torn on what I actually think is going to happen, because I could see it going both ways for how the night ends on night two. I feel like starting off night two with that is the better move.
I think night one, I feel like Jey Uso is in that spot to be like the first person out at WrestleMania. Like, you see, that's typically somebody that they know is going to get the crowd fired up. And I think it would free Jimmy up to do whatever they're going to need him to do on night two, you know? But I do think that's, I could see that match opening, or I could see that match being in the, you know, like the Charlotte Rhea spot being like second to last. I don't know. It's a big one. It feels like my Spidey sense is telling me, I think Jimmy might be going over, because just the way they've had the build, you know, they really didn't start leaning into it until lately. I don't feel like this is going to be like, you know, like the capstone match. I feel like this match is going to be kicking off the feud. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jimmy get the win and we see this feud go for, you know, a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. It ain't going to end on WrestleMania. I agree with you there.
Brett Shero says, should the Money in the Bank match be moved back to being a match at Mania? I like the first few in 2005 and 2006 as a Mania feature match as opposed to a whole event. Maybe make it every other year as well. I personally would love this, man. I think the toothpaste is out of the tube on this one, because Money in the Bank is damn near like basically like the fifth major pay-per-view at this point. It's become such a big deal. But I would love to see it back at Mania. I think it's a great way to get a ton of people on the card in a meaningful match that you really don't got to have a ton of storyline and build put into. And I think they should do 1 year, do the men's, 1 year, do the women's. I think that'd be a great way to freshen up the Money in the Bank briefcase. How about you, Jordan?
I don't know if, I mean, it's not going to happen, because like you just said, Money in the Bank's the fifth highest grossing pay-per-view every year. So it's not going to happen, first of all. So I think just doing a ladder match, like they're doing the tag match this year, I think that's a great way to do it. Just because, I mean, same thing with WrestleMania 31. Like, dude, we opened with a ladder match and it was phenomenal and it got six guys on the show. Like, I feel like ladder matches are the way to go. It doesn't need to be a Money in the Bank for me. I'd be fine with an Intercontinental ladder match or a tag ladder match. Like, those are all fine to me.
Yeah, they did the same thing WrestleMania 32. Remember, they had the one where KO and Sammy kind of took center stage. Like, yeah, I'm cool with, I feel like you need at least one big car crash match every Mania like that.
Yep.
All right, Zach Hertzler says, favorite WrestleMania stage?
Ooh. I'm going to go, I'll go WrestleMania 29 in New York. I just felt like
had the Big Apple in the background.
Yeah, dude, it was just so cool. Like, the Brooklyn Bridge and stuff was above the entrance, and then the Empire State Building was above the ring. Like, I thought it looked so cool. It was just such a cool visual. There's another one I would have went with, but I'm pretty sure that's what Seth's going to go with. That's why I chose this one.
Which one do you think I was going to go with?
I'm not going to tell you, because I think I know already.
So I think 33.
33, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that is probably the best stage ever. It was awesome. Like, I think that's probably the best stage.
They crushed it, man.
I don't know how you beat a roller coaster and then a ring above the ring. Like, I'm not really sure how you beat that.
I think it worked out because the Citrus Bowl was such kind of an old, decrepit stadium. Like, it really is like a dog shit stadium, but it's in Orlando, so it's still a good place to have WrestleMania. I think the fact that there's not like a ton of infrastructure, there's not like some giant screens or anything to work around, it really just let them go wild on the design, and it looked awesome, dude. You had the big like universal style globe, freaking roller coaster with the lights. It just looked tremendous. That's my modern pick. If I had to throw in a classic pick, I still love the set design on WrestleMania 9. That's Caesars, a horrible mania, yeah. But I love the look and theme of that. It's just, it's so much fun.
I you know what? Like modern ones, like I'm the biggest person that thinks like just doing the fucking video boards is the stupidest thing ever. But I loved the 31 set. I thought it was really cool.
It was clean. Yeah, it looked, it was beautiful, dude. It wasn't anything like 29, like you talked about, or like the 33 one, but it still just looked really, really nice, man.
Yeah.
Tony Barker coming back with another one says, which WrestleMania is the most underrated or doesn't get enough love in your opinion? I'll go back to WrestleMania 8. I know Jordan was kind of mild on my pick for Sid and Hogan. I think that's a great Mania, dude. It's kind of like the bridge between the golden era and the new gen era. There's not a bad match on it. Opens up with Shawn Michaels' first WrestleMania match against Tito Santana. You get Undertaker, his first babyface Mania match, went against Jake Roberts in a really good match. Bret and Roddy Piper in one of the best Intercontinental Championship matches of all time. Savage and Flair in an absolute banger. You got the Natural Disasters going against Money Inc. And then you finish with that really fun Hogan and Sid match, dude. There's not a bad match on it. Super colorful, big ass arena. So I'll go WrestleMania 8 for my underrated Mania.
I'm going to go 31, and hold on, before you say anything, because I know what you're going to say, like, people like this Mania, and I agree, they do. I feel like 30 kind of lingers a little bit into 31, so everybody just, like, automatically says, like, 30 is the better WrestleMania because of the Yes movement and everything like that. I think WrestleMania 31 is top five. Like, I seriously think it's top five and arguably top three, and to me, it's still the last great WrestleMania we've had. Like, it was just perfect top to bottom outside of the Sting ending.
Yeah. I think the thing that people get wrong about WrestleMania 31, they always say, oh, it was really great considering the build that it had. Like, no, it's just a great Mania, dude. Now I agree. It had probably the worst Mania build of all time. I remember me and Jordan, like, actually talking a couple days before we flew out to Cali, like being like a little bit bummed out, like, man, you know, it sucks that we waited our whole life and this is the Mania that we get. Cause I mean, we got our tickets, you know, the September and October before that. So we really had, I think we kind of knew like it was probably going to be Roman and Brock in the main event. But at the time, Roman was still red hot. Roman was still beloved. You know, the fans hadn't turned on Roman yet. And, you know, there was still some other exciting stuff that like it might be on the horizon. We were kind of bummed. But yeah, it's pretty much a perfect Mania, dude. The Divas match, the Bellas against Paige, or who is, was it Paige and AJ Lee that they fought, right?
Yep.
The Bellas? Yeah, that was a little bit of a, you know, that was your popcorn match. But, dude, everything else on that card was awesome, man. You even had the great promo spot with The Rock and Ronda Rousey. Like, that was kind of the last Mania before they just went supersized, throwing, you know, a dozen-plus matches on every card. There were 7 matches. It was all great. Even the pre-show was fun. You had a great Fatal 4 tag team match and the Andre the Giant Battle Royale. Stadium looked great. Like, I agree, dude. WrestleMania 31 is easily top five Mania.
Yep.
All right. The next question. Joseph Mulatto says, what was the first WrestleMania y'all ever watched and which one was your favorite? So my first one I remember watching was WrestleMania 5. I was either the day after or a couple days after watching on VHS. I have like the vaguest memories of that. And I remember watching WrestleMania 6 live. My favorite Mania, WrestleMania 10, for sure. How about you, Jordan?
Yeah, WrestleMania 6 was the first one I ever remember watching, and 17 is my favorite.
All right, Zach Hurster hit us with another double pack. He says, what's your go-to WrestleManias to watch?
6, 17, 31, 30. That's really like my four that are always in rotation, honestly. Like, those are probably my four favorites.
It's 31 and 8 for me. 10 I said was my favorite, but that's really just because of the two Bret matches and that ladder match at the end. 8, I'll throw on and just watch every single thing all the way through. And 31, same thing, man. I'll throw that on. Like, if I'm 31 is probably my most watched at this point, specifically the main event. Like, if it's the, you know, if it's a weekend night and I'm sitting up playing some games and and having some adult beverages. And, you know, I kind of wrap up whatever video games I'm playing, and I still got, you know, a little bit, you know, if I got 20 minutes of beer left to finish, dude, I'm firing up that Brock and Roman match and just watch it all the way through until Seth cashes in. That's kind of like my wrestling comfort food. That and Bret and Roddy from WrestleMania 8. That's probably my two most watched matches of all time.
Yeah, good choices.
Another one from Zach says, if you could change the finish of any WrestleMania in the past, what match would it be and why?
WrestleMania 9. It still pisses me off to this day that they buried Yokozuna and Bret in the same night. Like, there's no way that should have ended with anything other than Bret having the title. I just still pisses me off to this day, man.
Yeah, if you read, again, going back to Bret's book, if you read about it, it pisses you off even more. Yeah. Just because they had promised Bret that we're going to do this, but then at SummerSlam, Hulk's going to put you over, and it just is. Yeah, it's definitely a down. You know, it's definitely puts points in the Hulk Hogan haters column, dude, because there's no way you're going to read about how that all went down and not be pissed off. I got a couple, man. So first off, if we're going kayfabe only, I'll say WrestleMania 12, like I mentioned, dude. Yeah. Should have matched it in a draw, dude. Clock hit 0-0-0. Bret should have been able to go home as champ. So that's my kayfabe answer. My shoot answer, I think they should have pulled the trigger on Roman at WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans against Brock, man. If you remember, that was the second time we got Roman and Brock in the main event. People were shitting all over it. Sami Zayn chants were going nuts. It was the worst example. It was probably the worst Roman and Brock match. They were literally just spamming finishers the entire time. It was basically like F5, spear, Superman punch, and German suplex were the only four moves in the match. And the fans were just shitting on it, not interested at all. But towards the end of the match, Brock went like, you know, full Randy Orton mode. And bust Roman's head open, dude. Do you remember that, Jordan? Yeah. Roman got busted open. Yeah. So he busts Roman's head open. Roman looks up. They get this great camera shot. Roman's face, I mean, he was wearing the crimson mask, dude. His face is literally covered in blood. And the crowd comes alive for him, dude. Like, literally, they had been shitting on this guy all night. But all of a sudden, the crowd comes alive for Roman. He hits the spear on Brock shortly after. And it's a false finish. He goes for another spear and gets F5'd, and that's it, dude. I feel like they had a chance to actually finally have Roman get the big babyface moment they wanted if he just pinned Brock after that, dude. And it would have been I think that would have been like an all-timer of a WrestleMania visual, man, that Roman looking up with the blood covered on his face. But instead, it's just another failure to launch moment for Roman's babyface run. Like, they just... And Roman has some ownership on that because he never really showed the charisma like he's shown the last couple years back during that time. But they did such a poor job of setting him up to be that big baby face like they wanted to back then. So, yeah, I'll go WrestleMania 34.
I think another one that should get mentioned, and it's not because the wrong person won, but 35, that shitty ending to the when Becky pinned Ronda, like, that ending is so fucking bad. Yeah,
Ronda had a shoulder up. Just, dude, let her, if you're going to go all in making her the double champ, let her put on Ronda in the armbar and have Ronda tap, dude. God. Ronda disappeared for 2 years anyways, dude. Like, it's not like it would have done that much damage to Ronda, dude. Like, yeah, or at least just pin her clean, you know? Like, yeah, I thought that was just such a weak finish to such a historic main event.
Yeah, they fucked that up so bad.
All right, and last question, Brett Shaw. Okay, he's leaving us with a good one, dude. We got a four-parter. This is a good one to end on, though. Pick your favorite WrestleMania of each decade. So basically 1 through 10, 11 through 20, 21 through 30, and 31 through 39. So I'll let you go first, man. Favorite WrestleMania from 1 through 10.
I'll go 6. Just the main event alone, dude. It's so good for me.
I feel you. I love 6, too. I'll go 10, though. I think 10's my favorite. Like I mentioned, that's my all-time favorite. 11 through 20, I'll say 17, man. That's just a hell of a show, dude. It's the, you know, the Attitude Era encapsulated in one night.
Yeah, I'll go.
What's yours for 21 through 30?
I actually like 21, man. I think 21's really good, but...
That was Batista and Triple H main event, right?
Yeah, it was the WrestleMania Goes Hollywood. I like that one a lot, and I think the easy answer here is 30, so I'm going to go 21.
I love 24, man. Yeah. I'm not the biggest Daniel Bryan fan, so I don't love 30 for that reason, even though it's a really good show. I love 24 though, dude. Edge and Undertaker is an awesome main event, man. You get the Edge heads running in, and Taker just is unstoppable. There's actually a couple moments though where you really believe like Edge is about to end the streak, but that's great. Floyd Mayweather and the Big Show was way more entertaining than it had any right to be. And you had Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels putting on a classic. So yeah, I really enjoyed WrestleMania 24. That randomly, so that was in my dark ages of watching wrestling. I basically from 20 to 30, I was kind of out of the game, but I randomly ended up watching that WrestleMania live. I was out to sea on the USS, what ship was that on then? The Theodore Roosevelt. I was on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, and they had a satellite pay-per-view feed for that event, dude. So this was back when I was in the F-18 squad and I was in maintenance control, and we watched that whole pay-per-view live, man. So it was a lot of fun. You know, I was still like, I was 24 at the time. And I remember there was our maintenance master chief's old dude, man. Like he was like 47 from North Carolina, huge Ric Flair fan, dude. And I swear to God, he had to take a man walk after the HBK and Ric Flair match. He was like, I was AZ2 was my rank at the time. I was like, all right, AZ2, I'm going to go get a smoke, dude. I swear to God, though, dude. He was choked up, man, about to freaking squeeze out a tear after that match, dude, which made sense. He was from Flair country, man. So it was just, I had a blast with that show, being kind of like a lapsed fan. It was a lot of fun to just jump back in for a random mania like that.
That's awesome.
And I think we're both going 31 out of the 30s, right?
Yeah.
All right, man, that's a wrap, dude. Another 80-minute Pod Warriors Classic. This was a ton of fun. We got some more hard-hitting topics coming up that'll be a little bit more intensive, but we wanted to kind of ease our way back in with something a little bit light and easy to talk about. Jordan, man, hit us with some closing thoughts, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, as always, we really appreciate your support, and the feedback we get from you guys is awesome. Whether it be questions for the mailbag, whatever it is, we appreciate you guys a lot. And yeah, like Seth said, we're going to get back into a rhythm on these and release some more episodes. So yeah, we'll talk to you guys next time. You think you're special? See it in your eyes. I can see it when you laugh at me, look down on me, and walk around on me. Just